This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
9567-0000. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, KPFT Houston.
Wrote the following in an editorial called Vietnam Syndrome almost a year ago. It is impossible to actually relive the Vietnam War unless you were actually in that war and lived it a first time. And one thing we know is that George W. Bush, whether he was with his National Guard unit in Texas or whether he abandoned it for an Alabama Chicken Hawks political campaign, was not in Vietnam. And so he will not ever be able to relive the Vietnam War. But he sure has tried, nonetheless, by invading Iraq, another war, where American buffoons think they can bring their notions of government right out of thin air to a place where those notions have never organically existed. That Bush has even attempted such a thing derives directly from the fact that he missed participating in the earlier attempt in Vietnam. There is no better teacher than experience. And Bush never witnessed the hubris of trying to impose upon tens of millions of culturally different people a different culture by using 18 and 20-year-old armed American males as tutors. If he had actually personally witnessed such foolishness, then he would probably, and I emphasize probably, for with Bush you never know, not have repeated it. The young Bush instead, over the years, sucked down the conservative party line that our hands were tied behind our backs in Vietnam, that we were stabbed in the back, an easy line to adopt from the comfort of the so-called homeland. Even though millions of Vietnamese lay shot, incinerated, and dead at the very untied hands of the U.S. military, Bush was spoon-fed such garbage in his Houston and Texas circles in which he grew up. His father, who actually flew a fighter plane as a young man in World War II, declared that America had kicked the Vietnam syndrome with his own Gulf War. And now we all watch his son try and kick his own Vietnam syndrome, a syndrome in which a cowardly young man talks a tough militaristic game, and later, when put in power, attempts to defeat the unconscious memories of his own earlier cowardice by unleashing a foolish war machine, ironically, yet again, from the safety of his home. That's what I wrote a year ago. Extraordinarily, this week, there is now the new obscenity of George W. Bush, Vietnam draft dodger, literally invoking the Vietnam, Korean, and Second World Wars as history lessons for why we should continue to follow him into battle in Iraq. Bush spoke to a group of veterans about the similarities to be noted between the war he declared and the war he dodged. Among other distortions, he cites the enormous human cost incurred upon the U.S. withdrawal from Vietnam. The delusion and insanity, the mendacity and lies of the president and his sycophantic supporters apparently knows no bounds. For the major similarity between Vietnam and Iraq is this. On both occasions, the United States, without anything approaching reasonable justification, set loose the dogs of war on poorer, smaller nations and both directly and indirectly, thereby caused the death, destruction, and dislocation of millions of innocent men, women, and children. As for the submission and transformation of Japan into a U.S. ally after World War II, Mr. Bush apparently has no recollection that this was accomplished with the utter, indiscriminate, and complete destruction of every single major Japanese population center of innocent men, women, and children, including those that perished instantly in two American atomic bombings. Given such a savage and callous enemy, the Japanese people had no choice but to submit to American political and economic designs, which remain in place to this day. The destruction and dislocation of vast numbers of civilians was and is, therefore, the central fact of American war-making in Asia. All else, to paraphrase the great Jewish sage Hillel, is just commentary. It is not a coincidence that utterly changing history, its facts, its reasonable and obvious conclusions and lessons, is one of the primary strategies that George Bush engages in when he addresses others. For Bush understands that his policies stand no chance of acceptance in this country without utterly changing the rational context of understanding of a majority of Americans. And so the most common charge against the Bush administration, that it is a gang of liars, is not just an ad hominem attack. It is a description of the most essential, vital element of this administration's hold on power. For George Bush, the establishment of his conception of democratic capitalism in a region is worth the destruction and dislocation of vast, uncounted numbers of a region's innocence. Bush's culture of life is built on foundations of misery and despair, and the history lessons he imparts in his speeches are designed purely to obscure and ultimately banish that truth. For though Bush and his ilk see themselves as angels of deliverance, they are rather angels of death. There is no need to listen to George Bush's worthless and deceptive historical commentaries, no need to any longer give him benefit of doubt. For Bush exists in a world of utter delusion, where our great country is at war in a self-conjured, preposterous clash of civilizations against a relatively small group of religious zealots, where the real causes of conflict in this modern world, the careless, unconscious, and unsustainable usurpation of the scarce resources of others, registers not at all as an issue with him, where simplistic notions of liberty justify armed conflict, and where peace is believed to be delivered at the end of a weapon. I am so tired of him. And the central irony is that my own despair of him allows me only a mere taste of what his more helpless victims must be feeling. I'm Leo Gold. This is the New Capital Show. Back in a moment. Welcome back to the New Capital Show. I'm Leo Gold, your host. www.newcapitalshow.com is our website. and we are coming to you today from the studios of 90.1 KPFT FM in Houston, Texas, part of the Pacifica Radio Network. Coming up a bit later in the show, my guest will be Michael Warburton, who is the manager of state operations here in Texas, the American Association of Retired Persons. We will be talking about their efforts, their nonprofit efforts, and efforts to talk about health care, pension reform, and other such matters. But first, I want to get to a few news items. August 23rd, militias seizing control of Iraqi electricity grid. Baghdad. Armed groups increasingly control the antiquated switching stations that channel electricity around Iraq, the electricity minister said Wednesday. That is dividing the national grid into fiefs that, he said, often refuse to share electricity generated locally with Baghdad and other power-starved areas in the center of Iraq. The development adds to existing electricity problems in Baghdad, which has been struggling to provide power for more than a few hours a day, because insurgents regularly blow up the towers that carry power lines into the city. Imagine if you had power for a few hours a day. Imagine your refrigerator coming on for a few hours a day, your lights coming on for a few hours a day, appliances and small things you need for children, for the elderly, coming on for a few hours a day and then off. Back to the article, the government lost the ability to control the grid centrally after the American-led invasion in 2003. When looters destroyed electrical dispatch centers, the minister, Karim Wahid, said in a news briefing attended also by United States military officials. The briefing had been intended in part to highlight successes in the American-financed reconstruction program here. But it took an unexpected turn when Mr. Wahid, a highly respected technocrat and longtime ministry official, began taking questions from Arab and Western journalists. Because of the lack of functioning dispatch centers, Mr. Wahid said, ministry officials have been trying to control the flow of electricity from huge power plants in the south, north, and west by calling local officials there and ordering them to physically flip switches. But the officials refused to follow those orders when the armed groups threatened their lives, he said, and the often isolated stations are abandoned at night and easily manipulated by whatever group controls the area. That is the Iraq that we have created. That is the Iraq that George Bush has created. Wall Street Journal. China pays steep price as textile exports boom. Dongguan, China. Last summer, Chinese government investigators crawled through a hole in the concrete wall that surrounds the Fuam textiles mill in southern China and launched a surprise inspection of the plant. What they found caused alarm at dozens of American retailers, including Walmart, Land's End, and Nike, that use the company's fabric in their clothes. Villagers had complained that the factory, majority owned by Hong Kong-based Fountain Set Holdings Limited, had turned their river water dark red. Authorities discovered a pipe buried underneath the factory floor that was dumping roughly 22,000 tons of water contaminated from its dyeing operations each day into a nearby river, according to local environmental protection officials. In the more than two decades since international companies began turning to Chinese factories to churn out the cheap t-shirts, jeans, and sneakers that people around the world wear daily, China's air, land, and water have paid a heavy price. China has faced harsh criticism in recent months over the safety of exports, ranging from tainted toothpaste to toxic toys. But environmental activists and the Chinese government are increasingly pointing to the flip side, the role multinational companies play in China's growing pollution by demanding ever lower prices for Chinese products. Prices on fabric and clothing imported to the U.S. have fallen 25% since 1995, partly due to the downward pricing pressure brought by discount retail chains. My friends, as I have been saying, what you purchase, where you purchase it, how you use it, these are political acts. They are environmental acts. This is one more indication of it. And let's be very clear. 22,000 tons daily of runoff into Chinese rivers will eventually make it into Chinese bays, which will eventually make it into world oceans. Do not think that what happens there does not affect us here. We live in one interconnected world. Water eventually will make it into the ocean and will make it to the shore here. What happens in China in the air and the water will be impacted here. This is very interesting. Andy Shi, former chief economist for Morgan Stanley Asia, who now works independently, says this. Prices in the U.S. are artificially low. You are not paying the costs of pollution, and that is why China is an environmental catastrophe. That could have come straight from the mouth of a new capitalist. Andy Shi says prices in the U.S. are artificially low. And that is what I've been saying since I started this show. When you get cheap products from cheap stores, the price of the pollution that is being incurred by the world is not included in the price that you're paying for the product. We must change that. And of course, this is made possible by a system of globalization that is totally incomplete. It allows for transfers of financial capital. This system of globalization allows for transfers of products, but it does not allow for transfer and regulation of environmental rules and regulations, and transfer and regulation of labor practices. That is not a comprehensive system, and that is not a sustainable system. How can it be that we can transfer capital globally and we can transfer products globally, but we cannot transfer labor, laws, or environmental rules and regulations? That is not a sustainable system. And increasingly, I think people like Andy Shi, former chief economist for Morgan Stanley, I think this type of individual is understanding that. I think it's clear when he says prices in the U.S. are artificially low. You are not paying the cost of pollution. And this is why we say that when you buy organically grown products, when you buy products where you know the heritage of the product, you know the process that went into creating the product or the service, even if it costs more, you are at least paying the full and the true cost. A couple of more news items here. You may have seen news items lately on a Republican effort in California to change the way the electoral vote is counted there. There are two states in the country right now. I think they are Nebraska and Maine, I think, where electoral votes are not given to the winner of the state. Here in Texas, it is a winner-take-all system. Doesn't matter if you win only one more district in Texas in the vote for president than the competition. You get all the electoral votes. You get even the electoral votes in those districts where you lost. It's a winner-take-all system. And it is the primary reason why, I think, we get such undemocratic results in our electoral college system. There's an attempt now to put on the ballot in California an initiative that would have California's counting of electoral votes mimic the way it's done in Nebraska and Maine. What is the implication of this? Well, California is expected to be, as it has been, a state that goes Democratic. And in a winner-take-all election, like the presidential electoral college, California votes would go for a Democratic presidential candidate. But if they were to be apportioned pro rata, Republicans might pick up 20 of California's enormous trove of electoral votes, and that could well swing the election, making it impossible for a Democrat to win the White House. The New York Times editorial board has this to say. The Electoral College should be abolished, but there is a right way to do it and a wrong way. A prominent Republican lawyer in California is doing it the wrong way, promoting a sneaky initiative that, in the name of Electoral College reform, would rig elections in a way that would make it difficult for a Democrat to be elected president, no matter how the popular vote comes out. If the initiative passes, it would do serious damage to American democracy. California currently gives all 55 of its electoral votes, the biggest electoral college prize in the nation, to the candidate who wins the statewide popular vote. Virtually all states use this winner-take-all method. And the article goes, or the editorial goes on to talk about the fact that there is, as it says, a way to bring about electoral reform. Of course, you would have thought in the wake of the 2000 election, we would have seen enormous moves in this country to abolish the Electoral College, or to bring about the type of initiative in California, but do it on a nationwide basis. It, of course, is unfair that one state, California, might have its Electoral College votes apportioned on a pro rata proportional basis, but Texas continues to maintain a winner-take-all system. This is another example of unsustainability in this country. That is not a sustainable system. It's not a democratic system. It's not a fair system. And it's not a system that should be allowed to stand. This country should decide, and there should be a federal law as to how electoral college votes are counted. Either they're all going to be counted in a winner-take-all format, or ideally, they are counted in a more fair way. But this, under President Bush and the Republican Party leadership in Congress, has not even been on their agenda. They, of course, don't want to see it. They know the majority of people in this country are trending Democratic. One more article, and then we will have as our guest Michael Warburton of the AARP. August 22nd of Church and Stake. This is a stake, S-T-E-A-K, like a stake, farming for the soul. This is New York Times. Near a prairie dotted with cattle and green with soybeans, barley, corn, and oats, two bearded Hasidic men dressed in black pray outside a slaughterhouse here that is managed by an evangelical Christian. What brought these men together could easily have kept them apart. Religion. The two Hasidim oversee Shehita, the Jewish ritual slaughtering of meat, according to the book of Leviticus. The meat is then shipped to Wise Organic Pastures, a kosher food company in Brooklyn owned by Isaac Wiesenfeld and his family. When Mr. Wiesenfeld sought an organic processor that used humane methods 5 years ago, he found Scott Lively, who was just beginning Dakota Beef, now one of the largest organic meat processors in the country. Mr. Lively adheres to a diet he believes Jesus followed. Like Mr. Wiesenfeld, he says the Bible prescribes that he use organic methods to respect the earth, treat his workers decently, and treat the cattle that enter his slaughterhouse as humanely as possible. Mr. Lively said, "We learn everything from the Old Testament, from keeping kosher to responsible capitalism." My friends, there is a sea change that is going on in our country in all different walks of life. Do not assume that the person that you are talking to, because they are religious or not religious, because they are conservative or liberal, because they are colored or white, it makes no difference. There is a sea change going on as people educate each other, as they wake up and they understand the issues that truly face us. This issue, as I have been talking about in the past few weeks, is one that is becoming increasingly prominent. How do we treat, how do we raise, how do we husband agriculture and animals that are in our care? And increasingly we are seeing the high cost that we pay for the industrial agricultural system that we have. It is a great pleasure to be living during a time when I see that religion is cited as the reason for the humane treatment of animals rather than the inhumane treatment of animals, and where two people of different religions are able to come together to form business bonds and to support business that is growing rapidly and is being noticed by appreciative customers. This is the New Capital Show, www.newcapitalshow.com. In a moment, I will be back with Michael Warburton of the AARP. Welcome back to the New Capital Show. My guest today is Michael Warburton. Michael S. Warburton is currently serving the AARP as its manager of state operations. Michael holds a Bachelor of Arts in Communications from the University of Texas, as well as a Master of Science in Counseling Psychology. Before coming to the AARP, Michael worked with several Texas Planning Council for Developmental Disabilities grant-funded projects, including the Consumer-Controlled Housing Initiative for Persons with Disabilities and Healthcare Matters, a project focused on assisting low-income families to navigate the Texas healthcare system. Michael has also served as the Volunteer Director for Family Elder Care, a nonprofit organization serving older adults and persons with disabilities in the areas of guardianship, money management, in-home care, and information and referral. And it is my pleasure to have you today as my guest, Michael Warburton. Welcome to the New Capital Show.
Thank you, Leo.
Let's talk today about the initiatives that you all are focusing on right now. We have a Divided We Fail initiative that is going on to bring to the attention of Americans and Texans alike, of course, what we face in the areas of health care and pension reform, all the things that matter to people as they're young, but especially as they get older.
Right, right. Yeah, we're excited about this. This is called the Divided We Fail campaign. And we realize that Americans are really concerned about where we're going in terms of health care and financial security.
That's putting it mildly. They're really concerned.
Very, very concerned. I think it, you know, we think we must act now. And this Divided We Fail movement is exciting because we're starting from the grassroots. We want to get everybody involved at the grassroots level. We want systems changes. We don't have easy solutions, but we need everybody to start thinking about healthcare reform, financial security, long-term financial security, so that our generations after us can feel safe and secure. So this is something we're moving. We want to move the whole idea of healthcare
reform. The conversation forward.
Right.
Now, the AARP, the American Association of Retired People, tell us, just to orient everybody about the organization. People see the magazines, and they start to get the magazines when they hit a certain age. It's known, or it's recognized to be a very powerful interest group and a lobbying organization, but also it's known as a nonprofit organization that puts out content and advocates on behalf of the elderly.
Right.
Tell us about AARP, just so people know the organization.
I think a lot of people would be surprised, because what we like to say is that we're not about discounts, we're about what counts. And we are 38 million members strong nationwide. And in Texas alone, we have almost 2.3 million AARP members. And we do more than offer discounts. I mean, we have the great discounts to hotels and travel and insurance. But we have a wonderful volunteer network. We have offices in every state, including the District of Columbia, the Virgin Islands, Puerto Rico. And what's exciting about that is that each state has their own office, can really focus on what's important to that state. Texas has three offices. We're a big state. And so we have our office in Austin, we have one in Houston, and we also have one in Dallas. But we really are a volunteer-based nonprofit. We do everything with volunteers. Volunteers are the face of AARP, and we couldn't do anything without them. So they are the ones who really move our issues forward.
So there's a political side to the organization, but there's an enormous volunteer side of the organization that people should know about as well, so that there's a deeper understanding of the organization that people should try to achieve. I would imagine that you would want to encourage.
And the volunteers are the ones who help us lobby at the Capitol and who help to visit legislators in their Senate districts, their congressional districts, and really to get out, educate, and inform the communities about issues not only for the 50-plus population, but for everybody. We're really intergenerational.
One of the main goals of the AARP is the retirement security of its members. I'm reading from a pre-briefing document I got on the show. Achieving this will require focusing on the four pillars of retirement security: Social Security, affordable health care, pension savings, and supplemental earnings. Let's talk about these different issues. I've talked about several of these on the show, and we can't talk about them enough. Social Security. What is the position of AARP on Social Security, and as it pertains to this "Divided We Fail" campaign?
You know, it's interesting. You bring this up. In 2005, we had a blueprint for reimagining America was published, and that's where the pillars came from, and that's really where our "Divided We Fail" campaign kind of grows out of, where our financial security and healthcare reform, and these pillars are important. We don't have easy solutions. What we want with our "Divided We Fail" campaign is to get everybody thinking about strengthening Social Security, and that's our goal. We don't have an answer on this is how you do it.
Mm-hmm.
We want everybody to start thinking about it. Not only individuals, we want people to really control their own destiny, but also policymakers, businesses, nonprofits. We want everybody to start thinking collectively so we can really move the dial on financial security. And
affordable health care.
As you know, and I'm sure our listeners know, that healthcare is skyrocketing. The cost of healthcare is going ridiculously high. In fact, I have some statistics here about what Houston, in fact, is. Let's see.
Costly.
Costly, yes. But what I found is that right here in Harris County, the uninsured rate is 30%, which, according to state figures, is the highest rate among the nation's top 10 metropolitan areas. So here, we're in a crisis mode right now.
Does AARP back a national health care system or a single-payer system? Are there any particular prescriptions that AARP is particularly interested in?
It's a good question, and really, we are looking for people to start thinking about healthcare reform. We're so early in this campaign. There are so many solutions throwing out there, universal health care. I mean, so many people have different ideas. What we really want to strive to do with Divide We Fail is get everybody on the same page, everybody start thinking about it and come up with solutions.
But there's got to be some things that the AARP would prefer over other things.
There are, and as they come up, we address those issues. We don't have an agenda.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have an agenda of we need to do this, 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 and this. As they come up, then we address those issues. So it really depends upon where policymakers go, and then we decide, is this something we want to support or not support?
What is the organization supporting right now in general, or advocating in general for plans for health care in the country?
Well, in terms of health care, we really wanted to look at decreasing costs of insurance, decreasing costs of prescription drugs.
Mm-hmm.
That ties into specifically with the Medicare Part D, which is something that we are out there trying to educate people so they can make the best choices. A lot of different things, but really those are two of, I think, the big ones that we're focusing on right now.
There's a perception, I think, rightly or wrongly, that AARP advocates for older persons, and that advocacy may potentially come at the cost of younger persons, which may be in smaller, demographically speaking, smaller numbers of generations. This is the smaller generations are going, younger generations are going to pay for the baby boomers to retire, are going to pay for baby boomer health care. Is that a valid perception, or is that not a valid perception in the AARP? Because it sounds like what you're saying is that the AARP has kind of is undergoing programs where it may advocate across a broader line of positions.
Right, exactly. And that interesting you bring that up, because you earlier in the radio show referred to us as the American Association for Retired Persons.
Mm-hmm.
We're not that anymore. Legally, we're now AARP because
mm-hmm.
we realized that we're here for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And it started with so many of our members are no longer retired. Nobody can afford to retire at 50 anymore.
Yeah.
So
when are you eligible to become a member of AARP?
You are eligible at 50.
Uh-huh. And 50, I mean, my gosh, I look down and I'm... my watch says I'm 9 years from there. My goodness, and I don't think I'm going to be retired by that point.
Aha! Uh-huh, but I have a little known secret for you. Anybody can be an AARP member.
Uh-huh.
This is something
terrific.
That's not widely known, but you can be an associate member. We'll sign you up today.
I didn't know.
We'll sign you up today. Anybody not eligible for all the different benefits, but anybody any age can be an AARP member, and that really ties into our intergenerational, and we really are looking at supporting. Not only for our generation, but for generations to come.
How about this? Is it safe to say this, that the American Association of Retired Persons has transmogrified, has changed into AARP, and it is now an organization that represents or advocates on behalf of issues that either are of major issue to people or will become of major issue to people as they get older. So that I, as a young person, and this is what I, as a financial planner, as a financial advisor, I'm constantly talking to people about the future and the work that I do. Even to someone who's young who comes to see me, I talk to them. And so much of what we talk about is trying to look at the future. What will life look like for you? How much money will you need in the future? Where will that money come from? What is it that you want to do? So much of these things, and so even though I'm not working with a person who's retired, I have to have my eye on those issues. Is it much the same thing as what you're saying with AARP, that these are that the AARP is interested in issues that will affect people as they age?
Exactly.
And therefore, since that's important to someone who's young, that people who are young are important to AARP.
Exactly. You look at the Social Security issue. What AARP wants is solvency, Social Security solvency. That's 30, 40 years down the road is when it's going to be a big issue. So it's not going to affect those who are retired now, who are AARP members now, but it's going to affect their children and grandchildren. Mm-hmm. Part of this Divided We Fail campaign, when we talk to our members, we hear so many different stories of them concerned about their children, their grandchildren, who are not saving like they did when they were that age. And so that they won't have the resources available as they grow older. So we are looking to the future.
So let's turn to that campaign, Divided We Fail. How does it manifest? You're running ads and direct mailings and how are people learning about this Divided We Fail campaign? And what's the underpinning of the campaign? Obviously, Divided We Fail. It says we're all in this together and solutions have to be jointly arrived at across generational boundaries.
Exactly. Yeah, it's Divided We Fail. Together we can do anything. Mm-hmm. And it's really a two-prong around financial security, long-term financial security, and healthcare reform. And it's really getting at starting with the grassroots. We want everybody to get educated, informed, so that then around healthcare, what they need, so that then when it becomes election time, we can elect candidates who will be thinking about healthcare reform, who will be thinking about long-term financial security. So what it will be at the top of mind of everybody, of candidates running for office, those in office, people in your community, so that everybody's It's like a drumbeat. Everybody's thinking about this, and it's a drumbeat across the country.
Will AARP actually back particular candidates or endorse particular candidates?
No, AARP supports issues, not candidates. Mm-hmm. And so our issues are around healthcare reform and financial security. And that's really what we support, is anything to help our members, to help society, to age well. And that's where the Divided We Fail campaign is going to be crucial. We're out there, we're getting voter pledges signed. We are asking individuals to sign pledges saying that they will vote for candidates who have health care reform as one of their central issues to fix, financial security, that they're thinking about that. And they sign these pledges. We're collecting them, thousands and thousands of them. Here in Texas, we'll probably get to about 25,000 by the end of the year that we're collecting from people to say that, yes, we will hold candidates accountable.
You have a background in clinical psychology. What is it like for somebody who is facing a difficulty when they are older and they are facing not having enough money for retirement, not facing having enough money for health care? What psychologically, what does this look like on a person who experiences that at an older age?
Well, I think at any age you experience that.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be it's frightening and it's scary. And
but particularly if you're older and you're out of the workforce or what is it like?
You're desperate. One thing we found, one of our big issues here in Texas have been around utilities. And we found people in deregulated areas are paying so much for the utility, $500-$600. I mean, they're having to decide, do I pay my electric bill or do I pay for prescription drugs? Do I pay for food? I mean, it's a crisis situation. And that's really where we came about with this Divided We Fail, is that something's got to be done and something's got to be done now. And if we have to pull everybody together to do this, we have to provide the education so that doesn't happen, because it is. It's a horrible situation.
Okay, so we do something. It's going to take money. How do we finance what it is that we need to do? Is it going to inevitably lead, and this is maybe your opinion or AARP's, do we need to have a rejiggering of the tax code? Do we need to change our taxes? It seems that it's inevitably going to require some change in the tax structure in this country. Is that the case? Is that what AARP is thinking is going to be needed?
Well, actually, I don't think that's for us to decide. I think that's for the policymakers who we are holding accountable for thinking about how they're going to do the health care reform and how they're going to fund the long-term financial security. That's for them. We don't have any easy solutions. We don't have, say, if you just did this, it'll work. Mm-hmm. It's up to the policymakers to decide that. But we want to make sure that the policymakers that are in office are those who can make reasonable and smart decisions.
So from your perspective,
that,
the answer could be it's going to be nationalized or it's going to be totally privatized. Either one of those might be acceptable answers.
Depends upon what works best for the United States. Yeah, what works best and what works best for the Americans, mm-hmm. really.
More about divided we fail. Tell us a bit about this program and how do they get more information about it?
Okay, Divided We Fail. Well, we have a wonderful website. It's www.dividedwefail.org. And there are several ways people can get involved. And that's what we're really looking for is grassroots involvement. This is a grassroots movement. And we want individuals to sign our pledges. You can do it online. Go online to dividedwefail.org.
Tell them about the pledges. What type of pledge would they take?
It's a pledge. It's just saying I, as a voter, will hold candidates accountable on health care, thinking about health care, that's one thing that they will have on their agenda. Long-term financial security, that they're thinking about that as well. I will hold anybody I vote for will have those as top-of-mind issues, and they will sign that pledge. And we're collecting like hundreds of thousands of pledges as part of our grassroots support. Mm-hmm. We're also collecting stories. We're looking at stories, like I said, of individuals you asked about people who are living, who have retired, who have no finances. We want to hear from these individuals. We want to collect these stories. We're training volunteers to go out, collect stories from people who have issues around health care, who maybe can't pay for their prescription drugs, who are living without electricity. Stories that really resonate around the issues of health care reform and financial security, so that we can take those stories forward to the candidates and say, listen, here is somebody who is living without food, without electricity, so they can pay for their prescription drugs.
Have you seen any impact from Michael Moore's movie Sicko? Has that had any resonance or tangible effect that you've been able to see in your campaign?
I think what it has done is just raised the level of awareness for healthcare reform more than anything else. Mm-hmm. We haven't seen anything directly, but I think anything that gets out there to help people think about changing our healthcare system is a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Now, Divided We Fail is part of something called Reimagining America.
Right.
Are you part of AARP that's up on the Reimagining America blueprint?
The Reimagining America was printed in 2005, and it was the springboard to really do our Divided We Fail campaign. Reimagining America really talks about what's it going to look like as we go through the 21st century? What does America look like as we all age? People are living longer, and how are we going to adapt to that so everybody has a good quality of life? Mm-hmm. Two of those components, healthcare and financial security. Another component of the Reimagining America was livable communities. This is something that's really big here in Texas, as well as nationwide.
Because we don't have them.
We have a lot of work. And livable communities really talks about helping individuals to stay in their community as long as possible. And there's a housing component to that. There's transportation. Mobility is a big issue around how do you live in your community. Nobody wants to move out of their community as they age. They want to age in place as much as possible.
Did you catch the article in the New York Times the other day? There was an article about trying to forge new models. And in New York, they're working on forging these types of communities where the elderly don't have to go into assisted living, but they're able to live for a longer time in a more self-sustaining way.
And that's exactly a livable community. We're doing that around the state. And Houston is one of our target areas to really look at how we're going to do that, how we're going to help people to age well in Houston. In El Paso, we're going on our fourth year of an initiative where we're rebuilding a whole neighborhood to make it more livable, where individuals can, where schools and healthcare is everything within walking distance.
If you've just joined us, this is the New Capital Show. I'm Leo Gold, your host, and my guest today is Michael Warburton. He is the manager of state operations here at AARP. You can't say American Association of Retired Persons anymore.
Good catch,
AARP. I think we've got time to take a couple of calls. 713-526-5738 if you want to get on with Michael Warburton. Let's take a call from Roger. Roger, welcome to the show.
Thank you for taking my call. You know, I was listening to what your guest was saying with interest. One of the things that struck me as I was listening to him is that we know the demographic trends, we know the cost trends. Still, I'm a little bit surprised that the AARP has not taken a position on whether we should have an universal health care or a private funded health care. And I know that that might raise some red flags, and that probably they would have different groups fighting for different positions.
Michael, is it because these two positions are being staked out by different political parties, and therefore to advocate for one of the positions would put AARP out of its preferred nonpartisan stance?
No, it has nothing to do with that. It's more about really figuring out what's best. We don't want to jump right to solutions right now. We want to figure out what's best and put everything on the table. So we're really not in a position to say, yes, let's go with this or go with that. We really want to hear from the grassroots. To really sustain a movement, we want to really build from the ground up.
So you're I'm sorry, Roger. Go ahead.
With all due respect, you know, I think that how can we say that we want to hear from people without actually promoting the information exchange one way or another? And I think that there is a stand that AARP should take with having the knowledge and the information. Just hearing from people is an anecdotal evidence, but there is a lot more information that is available today about our healthcare position. So I probably am holding him to a very high standard, but I think just saying that we are going to hold the elected people accountable and we will know when it works, it works.
Mm-hmm.
But there has to be a position that AARP should advocate. I'm a little bit surprised that it looks a little bit wishy-washy. We want people to be involved, engaged, grassroots. Those are all very good things.
Michael, are you guys wishy-washy on this?
No, we're not. We just don't want to jump to any conclusions at this point. We really want to get all the facts together. We really want to see what happens in 2008 and see who gets elected into office and really move and make sure that all those candidates, those who are elected, are holding health care reform at top of mind.
But I think Raj's point is, with the vast resources that the organization has, how can there not be some specific blueprint, some specific plan that AARP is putting out there and promoting and saying that, you know, we've assembled our experts of doctors, of insurance people, of, you know, politicians and grassroots, and we are in a position to state and to demonstrate that this path is the best path.
You know, they can say we are going to shoot for the moon, and you know, this is our most preferred outcome. But at the very least, you should say this is what we would like to have. This is what we expect. Even not saying that looks like this is just a campaign for AARP to get some goodwill spread out with getting people to sign pledges. What do you want the elected legislators to do in 2008 if they get elected? What do you advocate?
Roger, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Any thoughts on his?
What do we want them to do? I don't think we're in a position to answer that right now. I appreciate what he said. I understand. I understand his feeling about that. But again, we don't want to jump to any conclusion and support something right away. We want to hear all the different solutions that are possible without supporting one thing over another.
So you're saying that literally the country is in a position right now where all policy possibilities need to be considered and seriously studied with an open mind, and AARP has literally not come out with any sort of advocacy in this area. Do you think it will in time?
I think it will. I think we're building to that.
Mm-hmm.
We're building that, but again, we don't want to start with the answer. We want to start with what all the questions are and try to answer those.
Let's take a call from David. David, welcome. We lost David. What sort of successes have we had in this divided we fail campaign?
Well,
what have you seen that's come out of it that is beneficial from your perspective?
We have done a lot of volunteer recruitment around it. We have trained a lot of volunteers to go out and spread this message, talk to community groups, collect pledges, collect stories. We've again, tens of thousands of pledges collected. We're also getting pledges signed by Congress, by senators. We're looking at federally of getting everybody to sign this pledge so that those who are still in office, who remain in office, as well as those who are candidates, will sign this pledge.
So really, in answer to Raja, what you're saying is that what you would like, what AARP would like to see, are these issues at the top of the agenda of whether it's presidential candidates or congressional candidates or at the state level. The solution, you almost trust that whatever it is that comes out is going to be a better solution than what we have right now.
Exactly.
You stated that we're in a crisis position. So what you really are saying is that health care and pension reform should be at the top of the agenda of the American people in upcoming elections.
Exactly. Of everybody, not just the policymakers, but businesses. I mean, everybody who's affected.
Mm-hmm. Okay, fair enough. Let's try David again. Looks like he's back. David, welcome to the show. Hello? Okay, let's try Monica. Monica, welcome to the New Capital Show.
Thank you for having me. I have a question, and then I'll hang up and listen on air.
Okay.
My question is, did AARP support the current prescription drug bill? It seems to me that they did. And what we're hearing now is that seniors are paying more under this prescription drug bill than people under regular insurance programs that have insurance through their employers. And also, that donut hole in the prescription drug program, that's just asinine. How could anybody have supported that? That's all I have to say. I will hang up
Listen
on air.
Thank you. What about that? The prescription drug plan is a test case for AARP's advocacy and congressional reaction to that advocacy.
And that's, and I appreciate Monica bringing that up. It's a good question. We do get it a lot. And yes, we did support the Medicare Part D legislation. For years, AARP has been fighting to get some type of prescription drug benefit into Medicare. When this came up, it's maybe not perfect, but it's something. We wanted to grab on to something, and there are still a lot of fixes that need to be made, but it's a start, and that's kind of how we're looking at it, is that it's not great. There's the donut hole that still needs to be fixed, but at least it's getting us somewhere, and that's pretty much why we supported the legislation to begin with. At least it's something.
Next up is Dion. Dion, welcome.
How you doing?
Good.
I agree with the first caller, man. AARP is coming up as with no teeth. It's like an organization with no teeth. If they're an advocacy group and not advocating for a particular type of change in the healthcare system, it comes off as something is missing. You know, there's enough evidence, enough research has already been done for them to come to a conclusion already. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think I agree with the first caller. It seems kind of unusual.
But Dion, what if AARP said, and I assume Michael will say that, what if AARP said, you know what, our goal is to push these two issues to the top of the political agenda and military expenditures down? Would that not be a good goal, even if they don't have or are unwilling or don't see any benefit to making particular prescriptions for what should be done? Isn't there benefit in that to just getting Americans to...
You're probably right. There is, you know, but I don't know.
Not enough for you. Okay, let's see what Michael says.
Well, right. And Dan, thank you. One thing that I do want to throw out, that we are supporting several issues that really... We're moving ahead with the Divided We Fail. The CHAMP, you may have heard of the CHAMP. It's the Children's Health and Medicare Protection Act. And it's a bill that'll improve Medicare for older Americans and strengthen the state children's health insurance program. And that's something that we're supporting, because we are applauding the members of Congress who voted for the CHAMP Act, because they're putting not only older Americans, but also low-income children ahead of special interests. So we are making some movement.
I'm just not really understanding your strategy. That's maybe what it is.
Well,
I'm not saying that it's a bad organization. I'm just saying it just seemed like that you should have been like out front, you know, and not waiting for, you know, to catch up with everybody else. Because I think most of America already realize that we need at least to try something different.
Dion, thanks for the call.
All right.
We've got time for one more call. Let's take Evelyn. Evelyn, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks very much. My husband and I were members of AARP, and we quit in protest when you supported the Bush administration's prescription drug plan, because we thought it was a cynical plan, and it seems to me that every policy I've seen from the Bush administration has been to further the benefits of the drug industry and so on.
Evelyn, what could AARP do to get you back into their good graces?
Well, listening to hear this gentleman say...
To get into your good graces, rather.
Yes, he had a chance today, and he failed the test.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason he failed the test is I was listening to hear him admit what I believe is the underlying truth of AARP. I think it was political pressure on AARP, and I think they buckled.
Mm-hmm.
And if he had said, yeah, we made a mistake, and we were... But he made some excuse about, well, we have to start somewhere. And so he has continued to lose me. And I think that this is a public relations campaign that he is on, quite frankly.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sorry to say, I just don't trust AARP. And I think they lost it on that.
Okay, Evelyn, thanks for the call. I want to give Michael the last word.
Sure.
No, and I'm sorry Evelyn feels that way. We supported with Medicare Part D. We supported an issue, not a candidate, not a politician. And again, we thought this was the best start for us. And again, it's not the best, but we're getting somewhere with prescription drugs. And I appreciate all of the calls. We need to hear from everybody what our perception is. We're always trying to improve. Divided We Fail is something that we think we can really, really move the dial on and get everybody involved on changing health care.
And presumably, if something can be done better next time, and if there are political alliances that may be more lasting or more better built, that they will be by AARP in the future as well.
We want a stronger future for everybody, and that's really our goal. And part of the Divide We Fail campaign, we're always looking for people to help volunteer and to sign our pledge.
Tell everybody how they can reach information about what you're up to again, please.
If you, the best way to do it is dividedwefail.org, www.dividedwefail.org.
And you can reach the New Capital Show at www.newcapitalshow.com. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to see you subscribe to the show newsletter and mailers, and post comments on today's show if that's of interest to you. Today's show was brought to you by Laura Slavin, Kevin Wilcutson, Laurent Edwards in engineering, and research and production credit goes to Michael Mendenhall and Teb Loki. I hope you have a great week. It's been a pleasure being with you, and I will be back with you next week. Take care.
The early morning hours of Monday, August 13th, an unknown person fired a gun from a passing vehicle into the studios of KPFT, narrowly missing a volunteer DJ. I'm KPFT General Manager Dwayne Bradley, and I want to thank you for your thoughts and prayers. This incident has drawn international attention and prompted important discussions about free speech and violence. The needed security upgrades could cost KPFT tens of thousands of dollars. Visit kpft.org and click on the link on our front page to donate to help our efforts. Again, that's kpft.org to make a contribution in this difficult time. This crime remains unsolved. If you have any information that could lead to the arrest of the individual or individuals responsible for this felony, Crime Stoppers is offering up to a $5,000 reward. Call 713-222-TIPS. KPFT will continue to broadcast the programming you enjoy and will always be Radio for Peace. I'm Dwayne Bradley, and this is KPFT Houston. This is KPFT General Manager Dwayne Bradley here to bring you some great news. KPFT is now officially broadcasting in HD. HD radio is unique because it allows stations like KPFT to deliver high-quality audio as well as additional channels without changing to new frequencies. It will allow KPFT to broadcast more than one program at the same time on additional digital channels. It's like getting more frequencies from the FCC while actually staying tuned to 90.1. and later this year, our new HD1 channel.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.